You're listening to The Purple Mystic, a podcast for the modern witch, with your host, Natalie Sedgwick. Welcome back to the Purple Mystic Podcast. Today I have the honor of talking with Sharon Rommel, who is a practicing witch from Australia and also a shaman. So I thought today we'd talk a little bit about shamanic practices and how that ties into witchcraft practices. I don't really feel they're that different in some respects, but vastly different in others. So I'm going to let you talk a little bit about your practice.
Okay.
There you are. I was just sad.
Particularly given I've just come back from... I've just come back from an amazing holiday up the north of our country, communing with our local people, who are the people of the stars and the moon and the water. And for me, this brought together everything that the craft is to me, everything that shamanism is to me. I stood on that beach and I read that plaque about these people, and then there they were, the spirits of the land, in real life person and in spirit form, everywhere out throughout this beautiful beach and peninsula. And I thought, yes. When we choose to see, when we choose to know that we are not constructed by linear time, that we are the ocean, we are the stars, we are the water, we begin to see, and we see in the imaginal realms. We open up our senses and everything is wild and wonderful. And for me, that moment captured both the essence of witchcraft, the essence of shamanism. They are the same. It's just that the color skin that we wear is different.
Right.
In many ways, the word shaman has moved throughout the world and encompasses a whole group of practices that are essentially love. They are respectful. They respect the divine masculine. They respect the divine feminine. And we walk softly on our earth. Everywhere I have gone, they honor the elements, earth, air, fire, water, as above, so below, as within. The more I learn, the more I see that we are simply one breath, one heartbeat. There is nothing separates us except our egos and linear time.
Yes. And I think that that's such a fantastic point to make, because I think a lot of people want to separate witchcraft and shamanism. And I think it's kind of two labels of very similar practices. There may be some subtle differences in, you know, I don't know many shamans that, well, some may have a cauldron. I don't know. I guess it depends on the culture. But I think that shamanism is an embodiment of the ability to return to spirit, even in the physical form, and to commune with spirit. And it's a practice that we utilize in witchcraft also when we astral travel. So I think that's a perfect statement there, for sure.
Well, you know, shamans do use cauldrons. They use fire.
I realized that as soon as I opened my mouth. I was like, but then, yes, they do.
Yeah, they do. They use fire to grow something. They use fire to give away something, exactly the same as we do in the craft in our cauldrons. And you can look at the cauldron and how it originally came from England, or the English traditions, when they always had the cauldron on the fire. That cauldron was going 24/7, 365 days of the year. So not only did it nurture them for their food, but it was also gave them warmth. It gave them to give away, to give. It was all of this and more. And in England, you're not going to be spending too much time outside because it's darn cold. And so when they use their fire ceremonies, clearly they've got to be inside and have it contained. Whereas, when I very first learnt my shamanic work, these are the people of Peru. They are the people of Chile. They have a vastly different climate they live, weave, and work in. And they were some more outside people as far as their ceremony goes. But then when we extrapolate it back and go, well, so were the people of old in Europe, in England, in Sweden. I've been to many of the great standing stone altars in both Sweden and the UK. And here we are outside again. It is no different. It's no different. And then, you know, people go, oh yes, but you know, the swords, the pointy hats, well, that was just the clothing that they wore then.
Exactly.
And Hollywood has mythologized, that's not a word, has
extracted. We'll make it a word.
Run with it.
We are the witches, we are the wordsmiths.
Yeah, we are wordsmiths mythologized. And so now if your young ones think that they've got to go and buy a pointy hat before they can become part of the tribe, and you go, well, you'd be better off to just walk.
I get that a lot, you know,
rather than put a costume on.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that I think is a key critical difference, is that witchcraft has a lot of tools, and yes, a shaman has some tools, but for some reason with shamanism, the focus doesn't seem to be on the tools. It seems to be on the shaman's connection with the spirit world, utilizing a few tools, whereas witchcraft in recent years, at least, seems to have flipped, where everybody that's learning about the craft, and I think it's wonderful that people are wanting to learn more about it rather than stigmatizing it, but they seem to think they've got to have all the tools. And I'm like, the only tool you need is what is right here in your head. Now, tools are nice. They help you focus, but they're not necessary.
Correct. Yes. You could, yeah. If you want an atomy, go get a knife from the cupboard.
Yeah, exactly. It can be that plastic knife you were just cutting your burrito with. If it works.
Absolutely. Use your hand. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Your fingers. This is where your power comes from.
But what I find with new people coming into shamanism is they too are looking for the tools. And it doesn't matter how, you know, so I've actually taken to creating sacred altar spaces in the imaginal realms up there with the stars, but connected to the earth, just to try to break them out of that need to purchase something to put on a physical altar. So I now create these altar spaces out there.
Internal. You know, that is something that the Order of Bards, Ovates, and Druids does too. One of the first things you learn in your bardic studies is how to create a sacred grove, which is entirely internal, so that you can transport yourself, which is a shamanic practice. You are shifting your consciousness into your sacred grove at any point in time. You don't have to physically be among the trees. Your spirit is among the trees. And that, I think, is also something that drew me kind of to both the Moon Ikea and to those practices. Now, I have to honestly say, though, what was the hook for my entrance into the Moon Ikea was you. It was your personality.
That's very kind of you. That's very kind of you. Because that was, yeah, that was a really...
Well, it's very clear you have a passion, and it comes across...
Thank you.
Yeah, your passion definitely comes across in your videos, and the fact that you can tell, you know, you can always tell people that are just kind of talking because they're trying to get in on something that's popular at the time, and those who actually live it and practice it, because it's no longer an external thing. It becomes internalized, and it's therefore just in everything that you do. And with you, it was very clear that this is something you're passionate about, that you're very into. And that's what drew me into that practice. And as I got deeper into the studies with the Moon Ikea, and if anybody's interested, you have the class on Udemy, right? That's how we say it. Yeah. Udemy.
Yeah.
So you might want to check it out, folks, because it's a worthwhile class to take. And it took me a little over a year, I think, to go through all of the lessons, but I didn't want to rush it. Mm-hmm. It was something I wanted to take my time with. And I'm glad I did. But I loved the fact that you had the rituals and the ceremony there and were doing it with us, because it gives you that sense of community I think a lot of other people need. And I think that's one of the differences, too, between witchcraft and shamanism, at least in the minds of a lot of people, is that witches need a coven, right? I mean, there's a lot of solitaries, but at some point people are looking for that community coven, and the shaman tends to be more independent, I guess.
Well, again, because again, I'm going to go, well, really? Because the shamans of old were in their villages and they were people of
True.
power and held a great esteem, as were the witches of old, the herbalists, the midwives, within their community. But and I think what is genuinely drawing people back to both the craft, to shamanism, to the ancient ways, is that we are completely. And people, I think, are starting to wake up in their hearts that I've been severed from something that's important. And I don't know what it is, but it is that community. And so these, yes, so yeah, I'm an individual doing this on Udemy, and you're an individual doing your thing, but we actually genuinely need to feel each other's heartbeat. We need to feel each other's breath. And the shamans of old and the witches of old held a really central pivotal role within their communities. But that not in an egoic sense. We've been under this whole patriarchal thing for a few thousand years ago. Now it's not doing the planet very good, as is blindingly obvious.
And right now we're all feeling that isolation from the COVID, the fact that we're separated. Before we started recording, you were saying that you all can't even travel outside your state. Now we're allowed to travel freely within the state, but you're supposed to quarantine yourself. So if you're going to go anywhere outside of the state of Texas, for example, if I was to go to New Mexico, I'm supposed to quarantine myself for 2 weeks. How many people are actually doing that? I don't know. I don't know that it's being enforced. I'm sure there's some people that are very community conscious that would do it, but I'm sure there's a lot of others that aren't, you know. And the thing is I think when we face something like a pandemic that's global, I mean, this is crazy. Never in my lifetime did I think I would experience anything like this. I think it drives home the fact how much we need each other and we need that community. And it helps to reawaken the seeds that have already been planted that something's missing. And it's not just, I don't think it's just community. Because I think community has existed somewhat. We took it for granted, but I think it's our relationship to the earth and to the universe and to the spirit realm. And I think people are starting to go, something's off here. Something's off here.
Not
You
working
people seem
for
so much happier. What are you doing that's different? You know? And it's
Why
opening
does
that
yes,
door.
why does your light shine? Why does your light shine? What will why do people want to stand next to him or her? Well, what is that? What is that magical thing about them? And
Well,
it
for
is
you, it's your
as simple.
personality. It's your
But no,
magic.
but it's but it's that love. It
Yes.
is that genuine love of our Earth Mother, of the stars. And for me, it's just that channeling of all of that juice. And going, oh, and we know when we get out of alignment, just go outside, just let the sun beat on you, not for too long in Australia because it'll burn the
Yeah,
light.
not too long in Texas either, trust me on that one. Anywhere in
No.
the Southwest. But no, you're right. I mean, definitely to and also in the moon, like depending on like if it's a full moon, sometimes I'll just go stand outside. I know my neighbors probably think I'm stark raving mad, but they know I'm weird. So they just kind of ah. But I'll be out there like, ah, you know, with my arms out, my face up, and I'll do it in the sun too, because there we need that blending of that
Need
masculine and
it.
that feminine. We need to feel aligned. So absolutely. And
And
so
they are two simple tips to do that, aren't they? Just spending a couple of, like I do it with the morning sun. It's too strong here, but to receive those first up in the morning and then to follow it up with the moon, you can't not feel peace and joy and connected. It's
exactly.
just such a blessing.
It is. And I also like to go out in the wind when there's wind blowing and put my arms out and just feel the wind off my skin like a cloak. You know, and I did used to do that when I was a kid, and I still do it now. I'm like, oh, but it's that, it is that joy,
Yeah,
that
it is joy.
connectedness. that feeling of I'm flying, but I'm not really flying, but you're flying because you're flying spiritually. And I think that a lot of people, a lot of people have a lot of misconceptions, I think, about the craft and about shamanism in terms of they expect instant gratification. They don't understand the work that goes into it. And again, I think that's a Hollywood thing. I think Hollywood has made people believe that if you put your wand out, that light's going to shoot out of it and you're going to have that instant result. And people want everything now. And people are learning that you can't have everything now. Things take time to come to fruition. And that's one of the things that I tell a lot of people that I work with that come to me to say, you know, how would I learn to do this? Well, you know, number one, it takes time and love. You know, don't expect instant results. If you meditate and you don't get that soul shifting perspective immediately, don't just go, oh, well, this isn't going to work for me, and walk away. It takes effort.
Yes. And it takes your but that's the whole thing, isn't it? Like, oh, let me give my power away to you and you will provide me with the perfect spell that I can not cut, then I'll go home with my magic wand and it will happen. No, sunshine, I might not be good for the begin with. Be careful what you want.
Exactly.
And that's
a good point, what you just said there, giving your power away. I think so often we give our power away to others that we think can do something we can't do for ourselves. No. So, absolutely.
I spend a lot of time saying to people, the answer is with your heart. If you ask me to interpret your story, you've got my layers of perception on it.
I think we cut out just a little bit there. We'll work through it. Internet is notoriously bad for everybody right now because everybody's on it.
Yeah, it is the same in our country. Yeah, I often, well, to just to go back on that point, you know, about people giving away their power. And like you, people will often ask me to interpret their journeys, interpret their dreams, interpret their hopes, and just look at me and tell me how my life is going to unfold in the next few years. And I'm like, why would you want my imprint on your sacred being? Why would you want my imprint clouding the reason why you chose to incarnate but haven't bothered to follow yet? You have to find that for you. You have to power yourself up because it's all there. Never, but we've been taught to give away our power, you know,
right?
The whole formal religion thing, you know, men standing in dresses on a stage with all of their incense and their bells and their whistles, which they mostly took from the craft, but they teach people to give their power to them, whereas we go, but no, don't give your power to me. I'm just here to facilitate a beautiful ceremony for you to take what you wish from it.
That's a good point. I want to touch on that because when I was a child, I was raised in the Church of Christ. We didn't have quite the same ceremony you have in like the Catholic faiths.
Yeah.
Of any type. You know, we didn't have a formal priest that gave, we had elders that would eat, you know, rotate who was giving the sermon that day or whatever. But I remember as a young child asking my mother something about that. Like, why do we have to confess our sins to this person if God already knows what we've done? You know, why don't we just, you know, tell God how sorry we are and be forgiven. Doesn't he forgive us if we just go straight to him? And I remember my mom going, well, that's not how it works. You know, we're told to confess one to another. And I'm like, but who said that? And she's like, well, Jesus. She said, Jesus said that. And I'm like, Jesus didn't say that. Actually, Paul said that. That wasn't a Jesus edict. That was a Paul edict. So isn't Paul starting to add in his, and it started a whole thing with my mom where she was like, stop asking questions.
Yes, I know that story. My mother was the same. She was she found, you know, I was taught by my grandmother, and she tells the story that them in the suitcase one day. And she thought my mother had dreadful had happened to her. She couldn't work out why my mother had brought this rubbish home in a suitcase. And like everybody who's converted, Radical Lulu.
Bless
them. They do what they do, and we thrive and survive and find our own way. But yeah, I mean, Jesus and the whole, excuse me, what about Mary Magdalene?
Thank you.
What about the whole divine feminine? What do you think, Mother? Read your ancient history. Learn about the Temple of Virgins. Learn about the goddess religion.
Exactly.
Learn about how we taught the men. Before you start, you know, wagging your rubbish about Jesus, who's a healer, a great sage, a great seer, one of the most amazing people that's walked our planet. But hello, he was a Jewish boy.
Right. And what did he tell everybody? Love one another. He broke a lot of social conventions of the time. He had multitudes of men and women following him. Women were ministering directly to him, which did not happen back then. That was a no. So if anybody's breaking social conventions, that was, you know, and the funny thing is I spent 20 years as a Catholic because I was actually converting before I met my husband. I married my husband because I thought he shared my religious views because he was a cradle Catholic. So I finally figured out 20 years down the line that not only was what I had been taught even then not exactly correct, but that the reason I felt so drawn to them was the high ritual that they used, which was all taken from the pagan traditions of the time.
All of it.
So I was
every bit of it. Nothing original.
Nothing. Christmas trees are not original. You know, and my mom did go through this thing for a while when I was a kid. I'll never forget it because Christmas was always a big holiday in our house because my dad's birthday is Christmas Day and my sister's birthday is December 11th. So we would put the Christmas tree up on my sister's birthday and, you know, we would always celebrate Christmas on Christmas Eve so my dad could have his birthday. But I remember one year for like a year or two, my mom went through this thing of, well, that's a pagan holiday, you know, that the Catholics celebrate. We're not going to do that. We didn't, you know, I was like, what? Where is this coming from? How can you take away my Christmas tree? I was more upset about the tree than I was not getting presents.
Yeah.
Which we did. I mean, she acquiesced because I guess my father must have stepped in. There was some machinations in the background there that I'm not aware of. But, you know, I remember this very vividly, you know, and she did the same thing with Halloween. I was like, what? You're going to take away my candy? What? So it's funny, but those things go back that far and have carried forward. And I think that's one of the powers of the practice, the craft, and shamanism is these things have survived even against great persecution.
And manipulation. And wouldn't it be wonderful if through this pandemic, where we've had to self-isolate and we've had to withdraw, if all of these religions could actually come out and go, you know what, Roman Catholics who were set up originally to control the Greco-Roman people, we stole everything, we're opening our libraries, we're sorry for everything that we've done. No, we took this tradition from these people and this from that people, and we are now going to honor women as our equals and restore all of the lost teachings of the divine feminine to all of the holy books on the planet.
Yeah, because the Vatican's got quite an extensive library. That would be amazing. But, you know, I honestly suspect from, you know, when I was in the Catholic Church, I was very in the Catholic Church. It actually created a conflict between me and my husband because I've always been drawn to spiritual things. I've always had a deep spiritual need to feel connected to the divine ever since I was a child. And so I was studying to be an apologist for the Catholic Church, which is someone who goes out and actively debates and defends the faith. And that's what it was that actually made me go, you know what? I can't accept this, you know. And one of the things that I discovered in that time is that the Catholic Church has many, many, many sacred texts and writings from thousands of years before the church, tablets, stone tablets, and things like that that are never seen by the human eye anymore, because they keep it shut up in the Vatican. It's in the Vatican catacombs.
In the vault.
Waspishly guard it, and that made me suspicious. Then when you combine the fact that there were several other gospels, including a Gospel of Mary, that were left out of the Bible, it makes you wonder why. Why were these books chosen, but these writings weren't? You know, and it when you look at the historical context of the time, you know, you've got to go, well, what was going on politically at the time? And they were in the process of trying to deconstruct and consolidate power. And women often don't put up with a lot of stuff. So they got to get that under control. So, yeah, it would be great to have some of those works opened up for the public view.
Oh, it would be a beautiful thing, wouldn't it?
Just to even if they said, you know, we believe what we believe, but we all feel that there's something to be gained from everyone, that we have something to learn from each other and come out of this with a sense of peace and love. I think love is the answer. They all say that,
absolutely.
But, you know, who really practices it? Yeah, exactly. And speaking on the feminine divine, you know, that was something that always bothered me too, because my mother used to tell me, well, they worship Mary. You know, they worship Mary more than they do Jesus. And she is very revered, but she's very, very wrong in that, because they are very quick to tell you she's a creature. And this puzzled over me in my head too, because even as a small child, I was like, how can a mere woman give birth to a god or the son of a god? I mean, she'd have to be divine herself. You know, what kind of a process would that be? And oh man, did I ever get in trouble for saying that on both ends of the scale, you know?
But yeah, and mine was always a Mary Magdalene. Why do they picture us as bad people? Where are the strong, amazing women? Why is it? Because my mother was a well-educated woman, and despite the fact that she took up this silly religion, but I would be, what is this? Why aren't they talking about the women of those times?
The Old Testament does. You see Ruth.
Yes.
You see Esther. You see many strong women in the Old Testament. But not in the New. There are strong women in the New Testament. Well, Mary Magdalene, for one, and Mary herself. Often Mary's strength was her silence. If you read it, it says that she kept these things to herself. She marveled at things, but she kept them to herself. You know, she didn't make a big public spectacle of it. And I think that that goes in line with our keeping of silence. I think there are times to speak and times to just sit and reflect to gain something from that. Yeah. You know, it's interesting, because I think back on those lessons, and I think all those lessons were always there, you know, but then they gloss over people like Mary and Martha, who it says were very close to Jesus. They ministered to him. They cleaned his feet.
They ministered to him.
Yes. And alongside him. And he was even chastised by the disciples for that, allowing them to do it. And he says, what they're going to do, they do for me. Let them do it. You know, so then why weren't women allowed to minister? Well, we have nuns. But they're separated. It's always this downgrading. Oh, it's this. And it's always diminuted, which drove me nuts.
A lesser role,
I
know. But we were all far too well educated coming up through that late 60s, that real flush of, I am woman, hear me roar.
Yeah, oh, love her. She's from Australia too.
To ignore.
I love, my mother loves her. Loves her. Helen Reddy. For the younger generation out there who don't know who she is, look her up, okay? But definitely, you know, and I think that We did, and it's a reawakening, and I'm very encouraged to see it, but I'm fearful that there are still, I tell people the burning times are really never far away.
Look at your president. Oh my God, he burned us all at the stake. Unless you're prepared to be one of those shallow ones that he marries that look very strange.
Well, and I'm
Yeesh,
thinking also
what a
there are
toxic family.
other things occurring in other parts of the world where women are still,
But
closed
Ben,
in.
I was really heartened to believe that I can't remember which country it is in Africa now. They've got a female president. She's just banned genital mutilation. This
Oh,
is her
thank
first.
God. Somebody put an end to that disgusting
Oh,
practice.
because it has got nothing to do with Islam. And yet, in our country, it's used, oh, well, it's your core Islamic practice. Bullshit. It's only about persecuting women. It's got
It's
nothing to do with the
torture
holy
is what
words of the
it is.
Quran. It's just men's bad, bad behavior.
And it's horribly torturous. I mean, that's just
Yeah.
and also I understand that the practice of sati, although it's been
Out
illegal in
forever.
India for years, it's still practiced in many of the rural parts there,
Yes.
but I hear they're really cracking down on that as well. So hopefully that's the case. I would like to see us come out of the other side of this pandemic much wiser, much more respective, and much more loving of one another, and understanding that we all have something to gain from each other. We don't have to agree. We don't have to believe all the same thing. We just need to learn to allow each other the space and the respect and the love to practice what you believe without impeding it
Yeah.
on somebody else.
Yeah. And I think that word that you used us in is absolute key, respect. If we all respected each other and if we all chose to live with gratitude, what more could you genuinely ask for? To be
Absolutely.
grateful for every moment and to respect everybody around us. Because if we're all respecting, if we're all living with gratitude, then we are our highest selves. And a
Absolutely.
lot of the harmful practices that are happening to the planet will simply fall away because we won't need those external things that we've been grasping and trying to climb the corporate ladder to gain because they become irrelevant when we live in gratitude and when we respect.
Yes, absolutely. And that brings up another interesting key thing to talk about is appreciation for time. And the reason I say that is you said, climbing the corporate ladder and grasping for things. When I started my own business, I did it because I didn't feel I was getting enough time with my family. I was always having to go all the way to all these other areas of the Metroplex. And 30 miles between clients, so I would get four patients in a day. So one, I wasn't making the money I needed to support my family, but at the same time, it was I didn't feel like I felt I was at everybody else's mercy. So I couldn't schedule the way I wanted to. I couldn't see clients in the area I wanted to. I had to take what was offered me, and it didn't afford me time with my family. And that goes back to that. Witchcraft takes time. Shamanism takes time. It takes dedication. And I get a lot of people that say, "Oh, but I'm so busy. I don't have the time to sit and figure out how to do this on my own." Well, then you're never going to get it done.
You do have that's the thing I tell people, you do have the time. If it's important enough to you will have the time. It's
Thank
all
you.
about you.
Exactly. I run two businesses. I have an assistant. I have a family. I have four dogs. I take classes all the time. I'm always trying to learn something new because I just can't not. I crochet. I sew. I do my studies. And I engage in my spiritual practices. And everybody's like, "I just don't know how you do it." Well, I just do it. It's
You just
important to
do
me.
it.
It's a part of who I am. And I think that's where people kind of miss the whole connection that shamanism and witchcraft become internalized so that you're doing it all the time. It's a part of who you are. That magic is always there. You're always generating it. It's in what you say. It's in what you do. It's in how you live.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then that reflects through to everybody else. I'll tell you a funny little story. A couple of years ago now, we took my now husband's children to the zoo in the middle of the day when the animals are traditionally all asleep. And Jern said to me later, he went, "You didn't even notice what happened, did you?" And I went, "What?" And he went, "It's the magic of simply being around you." He said, "Everywhere we went, all of the animals were all awake and came to you. And if my kids would run off to another place, the animals would not be there and they would be asleep. And then they would look back and they would see that the lions had all walked to you. They would see the tigers and he went, "Noticed, you know."
Because it's so a part of who you are. Yeah, that is fantastic.
And I said, "Well, all they see is somebody who is connected to the planet and to the stars and to the moon in the same way that they are." And they're going, "Oh, wow, a human can do it too."
Right.
I think that's all it is. They're like, "Oh, kindred spirit. Yeah, we'll hop up."
Exactly. I think once you are in tune, it's almost as if you actually put out a vibrational energy that other people feel. And another good example of that is there is an author here in the United States. His name is Christopher Penchik, and he runs one of the schools for witchcraft here in the United States. But he has studied many different traditions, including several shamanic traditions. And there's just something about the guy when you see him, hear people talk to him. And I have a good friend who went to Salem. She and my cousin are real good friends, and they took a trip to Salem. I was supposed to go, but I didn't get to go. Not bitter or anything about that. But she said, "It's so funny because we were inside of a store." Well, she said, "We were walking down the street, and all of a sudden, I felt this energy." I was like, "Who is that?" She goes, "I started looking around for who is that?" And she goes, "And Christopher Penchik walked by." And I went, "That's him." And she said, "And 2 days later, we were in a store and I felt it again. And I looked up and he walked past the door." You put out a vibration. I mean, there may not be any science to back that, but it's obviously there because people feel it and they see it and they're drawn to it. And we may not be able to measure it by our current scientific methods, because that's one of my husband's big arguments is, you can't back any of this scientifically. And I said, "That's your problem. This isn't science. This is spirit. This is faith. That's your problem. You keep trying to make it scientific or non-scientific." Because he's like, "How can you, with a master's in science degree, believe in magic?" And I said, "Because I have an imagination, which is the key to magic."
And magic is everywhere. Magic is everywhere.
I said, "If you don't believe in magic, go turn on a light switch, fool, because 200 years ago, they'd have flipped." If you think you cannot harness the energies around you, turn on a light and tell me that's not magic. That's magic. I appreciate every time I turn it on. I'm not worried about burning my house down, but I've got light. If that's not magic, what is it? And he just looks at me like I'm stupid. He's like, "That's not the same thing, and you know it's not." Yeah, it is. That's the problem.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
Yeah. And they try the sciences to shut us down. But true science sees. True science doesn't accept those rigid paradigms. That's something that somehow science has been bullied into, because some of the most amazing scientists, and one of my friends, she's an astral scientist, and she is the most open, amazing woman on the planet. So she's an astrophysicist, but although she comes from this very, broad, amazing background, she's go, "I believe in witchcraft. I believe in shamanism," because she said, "Every time a scientist says to you they don't believe, they're not a scientist, because in science we are always exploring." And she went, in so many ways, we're so many thousands of years behind you, because we still can't see what you intuitively know. And we're desperately trying to see what you intuitively know. Because she said, we know it's real, we just haven't found it yet.
Right, precisely. And what was really funny about that was we were watching, we were having an argument over crystals. Because he's like, you know, crystals don't have any power. And I said, well, you know, your crucifix doesn't have any power. He goes, well, that's different. It's what's behind it. I said, precisely, it's what's behind it. And I said, the funny thing is, what's behind mine is the energy of the Mother Earth. So about that time, we were watching a show with William Shatner, and I can't even think of the name of the show right now. It's like The Unexplained or The Unexplored, some of the mysteries of the unexplained. And they were talking about the crystal cave in Mexico where the big selenite crystals are. And right about that moment, this gemologist was on there. And she says, you know, I was in the cave doing some studies and taking some samples, and I kept hearing this hum. And she goes, and I thought the hum was maybe coming from the equipment or what have you. She goes, because it's like so hot, so I thought maybe they brought fans in. She goes, no, the hum was coming from the crystals, and we figured out that the crystals have life forms inside of them. They're alive. And I turn, and she goes, we know they can absorb energy from around them, and they can transmit that energy out. And I turned and went, see? Oh. And he just went, you know, he just looked down. You know, the audience can't see the faces I'm making, but my head's swiveling. I was like, yeah, I did that little head doing this, see? And so, you know, I'm like, you don't know everything you think you know. And you cannot be rigid. As a scientist, you cannot be rigid, because there's always an outlier. And it's the outliers that take you on to new knowledge. How often have we thought something was proved by science to find out 100 years later it was wrong? For example, the sun rotates around the earth. People believe this for thousands of years. Poor Galileo got excoriated for saying, gee, I think the sun goes, the earth goes around the sun. But scientists would have told you that the sun rotated around the earth, you know. Yeah. You can't take it all the time. You can't take it on face value all the time.
The Germans built a great big new freeway through there. The Germans built all the good Austrian roads. They are neighbors after all. Accidents, just dreadful accidents all the time. This is the black spot in all of Austria, and they start doing all kinds, bring in all of the global experts, fiddle around with this road, still there are accidents. And then the local council got tired of it, and someone went, how about we call in the Druids, their local shamans, and they came in to the council and went, you've blasted away through a sacred area, you've upset the
Oh, I lost you there.
The only way that you are going to be able to reduce these deaths with a whole group of crystals and place them in the area with our ceremony. And so the council was so... they didn't tell the rest of the world that they were going to do this, particularly the Germans. They just decided to take a punt and do it, because if it didn't work, nobody had to know.
Right.
So they gave the local juridic people the permission to go ahead. So they went and they hauled in all these giant, amazing crystals and placed them around the freeway, did ceremony, death count. Plummeted.
Imagine
almost
that.
Overnight.
Huh.
Because the energy had been so disturbed. The spirits of the land were so upset with what happened. It created carnage.
Exactly. And that's what I tell my husband. I said, you know, science doesn't explain everything. And now here's the funny thing about that. We'll watch those little paranormal shows on TV, and he's like so into them. He's like, you know, I don't believe any of this, right? Oh, check that out. That was so freaky. Did you see that? And I'm like, yeah. You know, and he'll watch them when I'm not around. He says he puts them on for me, but he's like four episodes in, and I haven't even been on the Netflix. So I'm like, And he's
Punching
an
bag.
incredibly intuitive person. That's what gets me. He knows things before he should know them. He's more witch than I am.
Yeah,
I told him
they
this.
are.
I told him that point blank. I said, "You are more witch than I'll ever be." I said, "You have got the highest intuition I've ever seen in a person. You know things." "Well, I'm just observant." I said, "But you know things before you've even seen it." And his mother was the same way. Now he acknowledges it in his mother, but he doesn't even see it in himself. And I told him, I said, "You cannot rely on science as an explanation for every single thing that goes on, because this is the real realm of spirit. This is, we were put here for a purpose, a reason, and we are supposed to be the stewards of the earth. And bad things happen when you're a bad steward." I think that
Just
story
look
you
at the
told
planet.
is a great example, and we've seen a lot of things like that on that show where people were like, "We just think maybe there's some magnetic something or a ley line, or all these accidents keep occurring and there's some weird something going on here, and it has something to do with the electromagnetic energy in the area and all that." I'm like, "Where do you think that's coming from?"
Open the heart, open your heart, open your eyes. Then tune in.
We're all
And
connected.
we're all connected. And so it doesn't matter whether you follow a particular version of the craft, so you or whether you follow some more of the traditional South American or Swedish shamanic practices or the Australian Aboriginal, with all every just come up. And I
I
can't think that it's any more simple, but our simple message has been convoluted by people who wish to control. And so then we get murdered and harassed and laughed at and bullied and all of
diminished,
those things.
entirely
Diminished.
diminished. Yes, exactly. And I do agree with you 100% there, that it comes from a place of someone needing power over someone else. And if they perceive that you can do something they can't do, oh, heaven help
Ooh,
you. Yeah, pardon the expression. So let's talk about this one. Here's a personal question for you. As a witch, do you recognize and celebrate the Wheel of the Year, or do you have your own kinds of things that you do to
I
recognize?
like it. Always have a big celebration thing. I keep it simple. I celebrate every new moon and I celebrate every full moon, because here in the spring, we're upside down. It is the complete opposite. And I got a little bit tired of every Halloween All Hallows here going, well, it's actually Beltane,
Right. I was gonna
spring.
say, felt for you guys,
And then it
that
just
one for us.
And I go, All Hallows is not quite about lolly bags. It's a little bit more than that. But here, have a lolly bag, but it's Beltane. It's
Right.
spring.
Exactly.
And so here in Australia, in the end, I thought, all I'm doing, Matthew, my son, to go, you're traumatizing the local children, brother, because you're just confusing them.
Well, now, here's the thing. Being on opposite poles of the Wheel of the Year, but Beltane is highly important. It's a very important Samhain. So is Samhain. But see, we're going into my favorite time of the year, which is the fall. I like Mabon. Here we're going into the fall. And I live for that time because it's so hellishly hot here in the summer. And I have to say, honestly, this summer we've had some pretty hot days. I mean, it got up to like 110, 112 at one point. And here it's humid. So it's like you go in the shade and it's not any cooler in the shade, Whereas like some places, it's hot, but if you go in the shade, you cool off a few degrees. Not here. You're gonna bake like a potato on the inside because it's humid. We have that heat index that pumps it up. It might be 97, but it feels like 105. So when it's 107, it feels like 112, and it just gets up there. And we had a couple of days that were up. We didn't get quite up into the 112s. We did one year, a couple of years ago, and I had black leather interior in my car. Never again
Oh.
will I do that. Yeah. Never will I do that again. I was doing home health, so I'm driving from place to place. So it's like you're in the house long enough for the car to heat up like a convection oven. By the time you get the air conditioner going, you're at the next visit, you have to turn it off. So it never gets really cool. But I live for the fall. I live for that change of the season when you walk out and you smell that first crisp. Well, right now, I can't
Yeah.
do it because something blew in today and my allergies are going, eh. But when you go, and it's that cool, you feel that change. And
Okay.
I
Well,
love it.
so for here, it's a real light thing, and it's very, very dramatic where I live. And so, which is why the two biggies, the equinoxes, are so, oh, and Beltane and All Hallows. But I also, I mean, I just love any time where the and sunrise. We are, because as a practicing yogi, I'm up before sunrise. And I love that time before dawn.
Yes.
To me, it's so magical, so liminal. And I look out, and all that you see through the mists, through the veils, it's just a wild time. And so that's my meditation and my yoga time. And sometimes I won't sit in meditation, I'll just use my yoga as a moving meditation.
Right.
So I like to make everyday magic, but I do celebrate the major equinoxes, Beltane, All Hallows,
Yeah.
every full moon, every new moon. They are my main points. And for me, my grandmother always taught me, just go to the tree and sit with the tree, and that is more sacred than Easter and Christmas and anything that is.
Absolutely. I have a tree, an oak tree in my front yard, and I love all of my trees, but this particular
Yeah.
tree, I absolutely love it. If I'm ever super like I'm gonna kill someone kind of stressed, I will go sit down and put my back against that tree and my feet flat on the ground, bare feet. I'm telling you, my neighbors
Yeah.
are, yeah, it's just Natalie. Don't mind her. She's earthing again. But I'll just sit out there and I will just sit with my palms open and I will allow all of that. I just visualize it draining out of me and the tree just supporting me. And I feel it. I think that tree loves me as much as I love that tree. And I told my husband, we ever move,
Absolutely.
I'm uprooting
That
that
tree
tree.
is
It's going with me. I
something.
don't care how much it costs us, what the homeowners association has to say about it. The new owners can plant a new tree. That tree is going with us.
I think you'll find there's a new tree for you in the new place. That tree belongs to the land, of course, as you know, as you well know.
I know, but I will
Yeah, so I
cry.
guess so. Yeah, I know. So, I mean, so as far as the major celebrations, that comes back to my grandmother, who wasn't so caught up on the big dates, because again, she had seen that religions had taken over most of those big dates and had screwed them up for their own evil means of controlling us. And so she put great store in being with the trees and actually laying down outside on the grass and looking up to the
Yeah, we used to do that as kids.
stars and feeling them all through. Yeah. So that for me, I'm 61 now. That is more important to me.
You are
Yes,
not
I. We. I mean,
61.
we. Yeah, I
What?
am. Yeah,
No.
I'm a 59 drop.
Man, I hope I'm that fabulous.
You are fabulous. You are fabulous. Yeah. So that comes. So people often ask me about celebrating all the Sabbats and the cross quarters, and I'm like, yeah, but it's actually more important that you celebrate every day, that you're grateful for every day. And yes, they are nice because they are great markers in how we behave and whether we should be opening up or whether we should be retreating because we don't want to fight nature, we want to work with it And so for me, that is the lesson of those great quarters, big four quarters, and the new moon and the full moon, is working with those energy systems so that we are in harmony with nature, not going against the flow. Because we know when we go against the flow, we get sick, we get run down. Shit happens to us. But when we go with the flow, somehow, how did that work well for us? Well,
right, exactly.
For me, that is more important. That's more important.
That brings me to another thought that I've never talked with you about that before, but I recently earned a Master Herbalist certification, because part of my practice is to try to get away from some of these commercial. I don't like big pharmaceutical. And this started probably about 7 or 8 years ago. I noticed that my husband and I were both every morning, 2 aspirin, 2 decongestant, like clockwork. And I'm like, this can't be good for us to be taking this stuff all the time, because eventually it's just not going to work for us anymore. Yeah. Our bodies just aren't going to handle it. And then I started looking at all the ingredients. I'm like, what goes into this anyway? And I started looking more into the use of herbs and natural remedies to improve health, because I think it starts with wellness. I don't, you know, by the time you're sick, you're already, something's already been off for a while. And around that time was when I started into my PhD program in child development, and we were taking a lot of family therapy classes. It was housed in the same department. And Murray Bowen, who is a family theory person, he was like, families are a system. And I was like, well, the body is a system. If something's off in the body, everything's off. So, you know, it's a symptom that there's something else going on. And so I started looking into herbalism as a practice, and decided that I wanted to have an apothecary, which is why I have the Purple Broom Apothecary. My goal was that it was going to be an apothecary. And I think more and more people are starting to turn to those methods of maintaining wellness. I don't think it's a substitute for Western medicine. I mean, obviously, science does something. And if you're sick, please, for the love of God, go see a doctor. You know, get your vaccines. They do make a difference, except for the flu vaccine. I will not get a flu vaccine. There's something funky about that one. But anything else, I will get it. I mean, you know, I haven't had a booster in a while, but I mean, I had all my vaccines, and I believe in vaccinating your kids against smallpox and, you know, whooping cough and all these other things. But I think that it's a part of a practice to keep yourself well so that you need the doctor less. And I think that if I could find a doctor to partner with, that could, you know, serve a consultation, or I could refer to, you know, well, this is a doctor that I trust that I think will do well, preferably a DO who goes in line with that thinking. You know, I really think that it's important to get back to, we have everything we need. We were given everything we need. And it was in our own arrogance and that need to control that we got away from utilizing the natural things that we were given here to make
on that point, until fairly recently, because China was locked away for so long, and you know, until the 1970s, as we know, you would go along to your Ayurvedic medical practitioner, as they were in China, Ayurveda,
traditional Chinese medicine
man or woman, and their job was to keep you well. If you got sick, the doctor paid you, because you know they did, their job is to keep you well.
Right.
And you know, we've gone against, again, you know, it's us going against nature. Nature provides us with so much, and absolutely, you get banged up in a car accident, something goes wrong with you, go and use the sun. It certainly has its places. I can't put together a, you know, a shattered, broken arm, but my husband, he's super, super cool at doing that. My gosh, he's a gun at that. Yeah, absolutely. Both have their place, and it's a shame that they don't work together. I did have a lady. She retired. She was 77. How dare she?
Yeah, how dare she?
Yeah, I know. And you know what? She went, oh, it's my time to start giving back now. And so she started going off to doing a combination of traditional Chinese medicine and Western medicine for free to help all of the people there, because she felt that she'd been given so much in her practice that she needed to give. And I'm like, wow.
What a wonderful woman. You're in your late
70s. Yeah. What a wonderful woman.
Yeah, that is a fantastic story. And I agree. I wish that people, that the medical community would recognize, admit, because they have to know, because like it or not, where does aspirin come from? It comes from the willow tree. It came from watching Native Americans chew willow bark when they had an injury to reserve the pain. So, you know, when you drink willow bark tea, it tastes like aspirin. You know, it's
aspirin.
You know, it's not good, but it works, and it works. I think it works quicker than taking aspirin because it's in your system much quicker. I suffer terrible, horrible migraines, and they have been getting worse in later years. So I'm sure it's probably hormonal, but we won't talk about that. And I started making myself a tea from white willow bark, chamomile, lavender, and white willow bark. And, you know, my husband's sniffing it, looking at me, and he takes a sip, and he goes, oh, that's awful. It tastes like aspirin. And I said, that's because it's my aspirin. It's for my headaches. I don't drink it because it tastes good. I drink it because it works, you know. And he said, well, maybe I'll try some the next time. You know, why don't you make me some of your tea? You know,
which, but that's interesting, isn't it? Because our tastes have been turned sweet.
So, and sugar, you know, is the devil. Yeah, not that I believe in the devil, but sugar is the devil. Absolutely. You know, it's much more palatable to me now. My dad chews aspirin. You know, he puts it in his mouth and chews it. And as a kid, I was like, how can he do that? You know, or he'll take those little BC powders and he's like, well, it gets in your system faster. I'm like, how can you stand that? But now I've gotten to the point where I can tolerate the taste fine. It doesn't bother me. I know what I'm getting into. So I'm prepared for it. And I think that if we can get back to some of that, it will definitely bring a different level of healing.
Yeah. That whole bitter is better.
Yeah,
as far as our bodies go, you know, just kind of trying to keep it, you know, far more of an alkaline, so things just don't go crazy and out of control with the sugar hitting us,
right?
And all those cells mutating and doing things that they shouldn't be doing.
Like, yes, my mother has been under both. You know, my mom's diabetic; she had cancer. Same thing with my grandmother, you know, my sister's hypoglycemic. I have worked really hard to try to regulate my diet because I like sweet foods. I mean, probably more than I should. Ice cream, particularly, it's my weakness. So I've gotten to the point where I just don't have it anymore at all, or very, very rarely. And it's a discipline issue, you know, and it is difficult, but you know, actually the longer I'm away from it, the less I need it. Because for me, it was soda. Sodas was the first thing to go. I got rid of all carbonated beverages except for like Perrier water. They're absolutely horrible for you. And I was having terrible pains in my right kidney all the time and getting kidney infections. That a lot of that stopped when I stopped drinking sodas. Now I didn't lose any weight, which was the point of stopping, but I definitely don't.
That was annoying.
Yeah, that's not going away. But you know, I honestly feel that it was one of the best things I could have done for myself, is getting back to taking less over-the-counter medications, doing more natural things, meditation for sure, because that has dropped my anger level tons.
And that's amazing.
It is amazing. It is. And you know, it's a daily practice for me. I have a little app that keeps me honest. And I think combining that and putting the focus on wellness and not being sick and being okay has made me different.
It's not okay to be, you know, to get sick. It's just not okay. It's not cool. Not cool. Better to take all those steps and to be well. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Honor your health, honor your body, respect. But then that's
back to
that
word again, isn't it? Respect.
If we respect our bodies, how can we put a carbonated drink into it, knowing what we know about them? It's not the 1960s anymore when Coca-Cola was new here in Australia and Fanta was new and Dad would bring home a 750ml bottle to share between a family of seven, and we would all have our little cup. This is amazing. Well, because there were five kids, mum and dad, seven people, everybody had a share of one little bottle. And then you think, and now you look at them and they're walking out with these great big liter, which would be two pints, these giant things, and one person is drinking this.
Yes, awful. Exactly. Well, I remember when I was a kid, we had one called Jolt Cola, and it was when the like Sam's Clubs and Costco's, these big, you know, buy in bulk places were new. Yeah. My mom would buy that Jolt Cola by the case, and we would drink a whole can of that stuff, three, four of them. And their motto was all the sugar and twice the caffeine. Now, I am willing to admit I like my caffeine, okay? I am a coffee drinker. But I don't just drink it in the morning. I drink it all day, at night. Oh. I'll drink a pot and then go right to bed. My husband's like, I don't know how you can sleep when you can, because I think that started when I was a freshman in college and I needed it to keep me awake, to keep me going. Yeah. But at this point, the body's just like, yeah, caffeine, yeah, we're old friends, you know? And it's bad. It's a bad habit.
See, I can't sleep. I have a coffee machine. I love my coffee too. I make myself two double, cappuccinos in the morning.
Oh, and yeah.
I don't have a third, but I really enjoy them. And I gave up coffee for a while because I would be getting to the end of my yoga and thinking, ooh, and all I could smell was coffee. And I think, that means you might be an addict, Darren.
I thought I was going crazy the other day because I woke up, I was like, do I smell coffee?
And my husband,
I was like, it got me up out of bed because I was like, I smell coffee. You know, and he's like, yeah, I started the pot. I was like, you made coffee? He's like, yes, I made the coffee. And I was like, I thought I was losing my mind because I could smell coffee.
I was smelling it at the end of my yoga. So then I had to give it up for a while, but I reintroduced it. But I've gone back to that. It's a ceremony. It's sacred. And
right.
The whole being grinding and watching the water flow through and frothing the milk and sitting down. I love that process.
That process only makes me want it more, you know, because I very much appreciate it. And that was the other thing I told my husband the other day. I said, buddy, if you don't believe in magic, I am about to drink a brew made from a magic bean that keeps me from killing you. So you should definitely believe in magic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And just to sip it and enjoy every moment of it.
Yes, absolutely.
But I just have my two.
Another thing.
This is my favorite part.
Our time. We don't appreciate those things anymore. It's always rush, go, rush, go, rush, go. We don't take time to appreciate what we smell, what we see, what we feel. You know, that's a practice we need to get back into for sure.
Yes, absolutely it is. Absolutely it is.
Yep, yeah, definitely.
No, we do. We do.
I read a great book for one of my college classes called In Praise of Slowness. It was by somebody named Honoré, and it was a great book. I think everybody should read that. So I think that we need to get back to being in nature more too. And I think that this pandemic may be a bright side to that, because I'm starting to see a lot more families who are spending more time together. That are spending more time together outside, because all they have to be isolated, but at least they can be outside, you know. So you're seeing more people getting RVs, homeschooling their kids, or doing the distance learning. So their kids are with them all the time. And I think we're starting to regain some of the family and some of the outdoor that we have lost.
Yes.
I just hope it maintains. I hope we don't go back to where we were in that regard.
If we do, it will be to our peril.
Yes. Absolutely.
And it'll be, and there will be another pandemic, and it will be far worse. If we ignore this and the messages that are there, I feel very strongly about this as we draw into your big summer, and or our big summer and your big winter equinox in late December, that everything is like kind of like drawing into this crescendo, and we've got to turn that wheel and honor those changes and come
Absolutely.
Back to the truth in our heart and maintain that, raise our vibrations, and really this whole gratitude, respect, love. And if we learn that from this pandemic, then as an entire nation, as an entire world, we will grow and come through this better and different people. With all this noise, with our useless, with our corrupt politicians, ours is as corrupt and appalling as yours is. They're all over the planet, these ultra-right-wing dingbats at the moment, governing. But you know, for me, all of that is just forcing us to drown out that noise, to come back to the core of respect, love, honor, raise our vibrations, and just all let all of that fall away as we usher in the new, particularly with December, late December coming.
Absolutely. And with that, I'm going to make that our ending thought, because I think that's perfect. So Sharon, I want to thank you so much for coming on to the podcast with me to talk a little bit about these practices. So thank you very much. So why don't you tell everybody where they can find you?
You can find me. I have all of my courses on udemy.com, which is udemy.com. And Udemy are fantastic because they have this amazing thing that education should be affordable for everybody. And so you don't even have to pay a lot of money, somewhere between 10 and 20, 25 US dollars. And you've got yourself a great array of courses. Not only am I there, Natalie here is also there with one of her courses. So get out there, have a look at it, check it out, because there are some really beautiful people teaching on this platform, and I happen to be one of them.
Absolutely, and your course was definitely worth every penny I paid, which wasn't a lot. I did get a good deal, but it was worth it. I feel I should have paid more, but all right.